Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Youth with a Future, the podcast devoted to challenging, inspiring, educating, and supporting youth to maximize their potential and transform their dreams into reality. We don't ignore their challenges. We acknowledge them. And through this podcast, seek to provide the support and information needed to overcome, achieve, and recognize their true potential. We ask you to help us inspire and encourage our next generation of leaders. To learn more, or if you'd like to contact us, go to our website, www.ywfleaders.org. Now, Youth with a Future podcast.
Good morning. This is Margaret Fomer, your host with Youth with the Futures podcast. We are delighted to be with you this morning as we celebrate Juneteenth. And we have with us this morning Dr. Charlotte Smart, who is an exceptional needs specialist in Chicago Public Schools, where she has worked for more than 20 years. And she works with special needs students there in the Chicago Public School District. She is a mentor for other board certified teachers such as herself, and she mentors student teachers at different various Chicago universities. And as a veteran teacher, a member of her school's administration instructional leadership team, She has done a lot of work within the community of Chicago, including the Chicago Urban League, where she helped to lobby for improved learning conditions and practices in the schools there. She's worked for nonprofits, the Better Boys Foundation, where she has given out almost $1 million in college scholarships. She also has traveled and worked with the Reverend Jesse Jackson. And she's also an author of children's novels and poetry. So she lives with her husband in the community of Chicago. So we're delighted to have Dr. Smart with us. So welcome as we talk about Juneteenth and the history of it, what it means, and where we are today, where we've come from, and where we are today, and what strides we need to continue to make in this effort. So how are you this morning, Dr. Smart?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you very well.
Okay. I didn't know if I was on mute. Can you still hear me?
We can hear you very well.
Okay. Yes. I think that Juneteenth is highly significant, especially for the young people today. You and myself probably heard about Juneteenth when we were in maybe high school, and I think you're from Texas, so you knew about it, but I knew about it, and a lot of people in the African-American community knew about it, but it was not taught in school. I actually had to take an African-American history class in order to find out about it. What's so significant about it now is that our president saw fit to make it a national holiday, and I think it opens up a wide, a far-reaching conversation about slavery in this country and about the history of institutional racism and how much more work we have to do, because when you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. And what we see around the country and what I see in the classroom are young people who do not understand the significance of this history. And I'm hoping that it continues to open up conversations. I'm very glad that we have this opportunity to celebrate this event nationwide. And I'm hoping that when I get back to school in the fall, that more of my students will be more interested and be more energized about learning more about their own history.
Exactly, exactly. Yes, I am from Texas. I grew up in Texas and live there now. although resided in Denver for many years, where we still have our nonprofit Youth with a Future. But yes, as a young child, we had the Juneteenth celebration, and it was later when I was learned that what it was, the significance of what it all meant. And having been from Texas, even my great grandfather on my mother's maternal grandfather was a slave there in the state of Texas. And so he was one of those that didn't learn about it, as we know the history of it, going back when President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation back in January 1st of 1963. The slaves in Texas did not learn about it until June 19th, 1865, 2.5 years later. And it was when the Army came and General Gardner pronounced to them that the emancipation had been signed and that slaves were free. And even after that, as I have been reading and studying, as more attention has been given to this history, that there were still little pockets of Texas that slave owners still didn't tell their slaves about it until later in the fall of 1865 when they heard about it. So they didn't even get emancipated on June 19th, which is leads me, as we'll talk about in our time, a book that's called Slavery by Another Name, what happened even after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed and slaves were free. But there's a lot of history behind it, and especially now with the school systems and parents and society and the community saying we don't want this taught, and disguise it with what's considered the critical race theory, which I'm sure Dr. Smart will talk a little bit about, that that's what we're teaching when, as you've already said, all we want is history to be told, just as the American Revolution, the founding of the our country back in 1776, with the our Constitution and all being finalized and making us a country. We want that part of the history. As I was watching a show yesterday on PBS, and they talked about the book Slavery by Another Name, and they talked about even the bricks in the city of Atlanta, Georgia. And you're from the South, Dr. Smart, from Alabama, but even the bricks there now were laid by slaves. When we talk about the very White House in Washington, D.C., that was constructed and built by slaves. And different universities now are talking about the role that slaves played in the building and construction of our oldest institutions. And so it was built on the backbone of slaves. Even Wall Street itself, the monies that were being poured into New York, was a lot came from the work and the cotton fields and that was poured onto the backs of slaves. And Dr. Smart, just jump in at any time as I'm talking and add, give more comments about anything that I said.
I think that you hit the nail on the head when you talked about critical race theory. As I said before, a lot of what I learned in high school about African-American history, I had to take an African-American history class, and it was such a big controversy. That was back in the 70s, the mid-70s. And it was such a big controversy back then because we had only been my mother's from Alabama, but I grew up in Florida, and we had only been in desegregated schools from the time I was in the fifth grade. So by the time I got to the 10th grade, there was this 5 years of integration in that small town where I'm from. But there was still all kinds of really, really tough environmental situations that African-American students had to negotiate through in order to just learn anything about themselves. And what I hear today when we're talking about critical race theory, as you said, is another movement to keep that history hidden. They don't want that history taught because then it would show the monumental institution of racism and how far-reaching it was into the lives of everyone, those who benefited from it and those who were victims of it. For African-American community, it meant all kinds of things. It meant not only that we were just learning how to read and write coming out of slavery during Reconstruction, it also meant that small towns where African-Americans had built up wealth and stuff for themselves, all of a sudden being bulldozed to the ground because of eminent domain. And there's a movement right now in the city of Chicago with the Reverend Jesse Jackson to start to try to look at that particular part of marginalization when it comes to the critical race theory. Critical race theory saying, you know, don't teach these things because they're not true. If we're talking about history of America, you can't leave African Americans out because this whole country was based on the institution of racism. I learned something recently that they had only hinted at when I was in high school. There were banks, there were insurance companies that gave loans to and paid out premiums on slaves that were owned by slave masters. So actual people were put up as property in order to get money from it. And so a lot of banks back then were banks that solely dealt with, you know, giving loans and making money off of slaves. So we're talking about a really big industry. And I hope that this holiday that we're commemorating really starts to chip away at that critical race theory. I think critical race theory is an attempt, like I said, to hide the truth, the whole truth, not just part of it. And so those people who have benefited from the institution of slavery and its far-reaching arm, we were talking about, is still here. And although we don't look at it as marginalization, for instance, in Chicago, a big problem here has been, and it continues to be, people of color, and especially African Americans, living in what we call food deserts, where there's no fresh food because the stores keep closing in those neighborhoods. So they're fighting for that. Affordable housing in safe areas, they're fighting for that. Access to education beyond high school, they're still fighting for that. So there are still these, the long arm of slavery and the history of it, it starting with stuff like Juneteenth, is still here. And I hope this conversation gets wider, and I hope the conversation leads us to chip away at those arms that are still with us today.
Exactly, right. You've touched on so many, many, many parts, and I'll go back. We've had several young people to join us today, and welcome. We are talking again about Juneteenth's history and how it continued to affect us today. And we ask that any of you join in with questions or comments as we dialogue on this issue. And with us again is Dr. Smart from a special needs instructor and mentor for other teachers in the Chicago Public Schools is our guest with us as well. We, as I mentioned, was born in East Texas, and when June 19th, 1865 happened, and the slaves were released, my great-grandfather, my mother's father, was one of those slaves. And on his birth certificate and things that we found and know about, that he was listed as a mulatto, meaning he was the child of a slave and one of the white, I assume the plantation owner, because, and I say that, because he could read and write. And when he was freed, and in my little country town is the church that he founded. As you know, back then, all the other slaves came to those who could read and write to help them with everything from reading the Bible, from taking care of anything about business, what were they to do. And so my great-grandfather was the first pastor of the church that still exists. These 160 or so years later, he was also one of the first teachers there in what they called the colored school that they were allowed to have there as well. And so fortunately, we had a few people who could read and write and shared that with the community. And within itself teaches us, and to the young people who are with us today, the responsibility that we have, that whatever we have and whatever we gain, that we share it with the larger community, that so that we all can use all of our potential to be all that we can be. But as you said, the institution of slavery and the effect that it still has on us today. And so we will talk about that today. And so please, again, young people and the staff there at Youth with the Future, please join in with us. But we have talked about the results of that and what happened even after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, that even before President Lincoln was elected, the things that came about, there was the 14th Amendment that was wanting to be Stephen Douglas, who was one of the legislators back at that time in 1863, wanted to put a 14th Amendment that said African Americans could not be elected officials at the federal, state, local. They could not have any of the rights. So what we had to even overcome coming out of slavery with absolutely nothing. And as you said, that this history is being fought against in the schools, and most cities now have are proposing in their school districts that we cannot teach critical race theory. And no one wants to teach critical race theory. What we want to teach is just the history of the United States. As I said earlier, before, young people, you joined us, that just as we teach the American Revolution, the signing of the Constitution, Bill of Rights, that we want to show the whole history of America. And joining us as well is Dr. Will Miles, a clinical psychologist there in the city of Denver. Dr. Miles has his own private practice, as well as he has worked with the University of Colorado, and especially in the athletic department, and has mentored and continues to work with the Denver Broncos. And so, Dr. Miles, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I think you've heard Dr. Smart, who you have met before, and podcast is with us as well out of Chicago. But okay. The big
good,
issue.
Good morning, Dr. Smart.
Good morning.
And joining us as well, Dr. Miles, are several of the young people that we're working with through Youth with the Future workshops, learning the 8 core values of leadership as well, and the staff in Denver is with us also. And we were just sharing about the history of Juneteenth and the role that CRT, critical race theory, has played in not getting that history out. a big part of it is that they are saying they don't want their children to feel bad or about what occurred, and no one is wanting people to feel bad about what has occurred historically against African Americans. We just want the truth to be told, that this is part of our history. And that, as we know, if we don't learn about history, things will tend to repeat themselves. So we just want to let them know the history of our country, what we're talking about this morning. Dr. Miles, would you like to comment on June 19th? And as a matter of fact, we've had the pleasure of meeting Miss Oprah Lee, who is considered the grandmother of June 19th. She was the one who fought, and went to President Biden and asked him to make this a federal holiday, which is we're celebrating today. So several federal, state, and city offices in some towns, still today, there are towns who do not want to acknowledge it as a holiday. And this is the first federal holiday that has been instituted for over 40 years, when Martin Luther King Day, Dr. King Day, was made a federal holiday as well. But Ms. Oprah Lee, well, just a few days before she went to Washington, this was initiated, came and spoke at our church on the issue and her history. And just if you haven't heard, she was born in Marshall, Texas. At the age of 12, she moved to Fort Worth, Texas, and her family was able to purchase a home. And she's 96 years old, so we're talking about something that happened more than 80 years ago. But they came and burned down her family's home. And so that's the history that she has of the effects of slavery, the effects of racism, or things that were happening against African Americans. And but she still graduated from college. She went on and taught in the Fort Worth schools, and it just has been her determination to see that we recognize the true when freedom actually happens for all people in the United States, from a federal or governmental standpoint. But Dr. Smart and I were sharing about what happened after slavery, and there's a book called Slavery by Another Name that continued to occur after the Emancipation Proclamation. So Dr. Miles, would you like to please join and add to the conversation?
Thank you, and congratulations. Job very, very well done to get us to this point. The notion of self-knowledge is often said from times of ancient Africa and Greece at the beginning of knowledge, to know thyself. And that means to know thy people, thy culture, et cetera. And actually, many years ago, I think the professor Nick Aaron Ford at Morgan State College in Baltimore said Black studies was therapeutic for Black people. And that's been true of any ethnic or collective group. It's important to know their own history as being healthy for themselves. When I taught in the Caribbean, used to all kinds of literature on Caribbean history, Jamaican history, Barbados history. You go to Europe, there's lots of works on the United Kingdom and British history, France, China. They all have their histories and it's taught to their people. Just allow them to acquire a healthier collective sense of self as to where they are, where they've been, and where they may be going. And when you deal with a very diverse society such as America, it's important that all parts be represented fairly and equally. And what's happened is that African American studies or Black studies, et cetera, has not been taught to all of American citizens. And what happens is that American citizens all have a history, ethnically speaking, whether you're Italian-American, Irish-American, German-American, Jewish-American, etc. And those histories need to be taught, not just to your own group, but subsequently to the entire population in the democracy, in the country, because they all have contributed as citizens and or had their experiences. Black and African Americans have been here for generations. We're citizens by birthright, service to the country, and we're entitled to all the rights, privileges, and opportunities that every other American, regardless of race, color, and creed, are entitled to. But it hasn't been the realities, and it's been a fight for it. And that's where Juneteenth comes in, and many of the civil rights movement kinds of things come in. We have to fight for it, unfairly fight for it, but we must fight for it if we're to be truly citizens and feel good about ourselves and the rest of America. Realizes the contributions and struggles and achievements we've made, and they need to know that. So I think that's the backdrop of why Juneteenth is so very important, and post-slavery, neo-slavery, slavery by any other name, Jim Crow, all of those kinds of descriptions of movements and terminologies need to be addressed. It is healthy for Black people in America, but it's healthy for all Americans, because African American history is a part of the greater scope of American history, which means it's not just for people of color and Black people. It's for all Americans as such, just as we ought to know about the European Americans and Caribbean Americans, etc. All Americans should know about this history as such. It should be a part of a diverse history curriculum as such. I hope that makes sense to people who are hearing me.
Well, definitely.
Understandable,
yes.
At least?
Oh, yes, exactly.
Without that, I mean, you're like depriving the body of critical nutrition if you leave it out. Critical. For African Americans, it's critical to our identity, self-confidence, self-awareness, actually survival is critical. I do know from many years of experience of African-American professor at a number of schools in America and in the Caribbean, without it, there is a limited behavior potential among African-Americans without it. With it, there's an increased behavior potential, more likely to achieve and be successful in your psychosocial development, education, et cetera. So it's a critical ingredient in our functioning. And people who really oppose it, I'm sure they know it. But we're entitled to it, and we have to educate ourselves and, quote, unquote, fight for it in so many ways to get it legally, educationally in the system, in the curriculum, and to be taught and explained to all Americans as such. We belong. We deserve it. We have a place of honor in the American system and the building of this country.
Well said, well said. And I have yet just saw the headlines of a new study, and I think you really touched on it, the effects of trauma that is, they are even thinking it may be into the DNA. And so, therefore, a lot of the issues that we're dealing with as African-Americans is the result of the slavery and the effects of it. And I think you touched on of what you just said.
Well, I think when it comes to the trauma, my perspective is that anyway, I've looked at trauma and studied for years. Actually, my doctoral dissertation was around trauma many years ago, and I've worked in it for a long time. Trauma treated, resolved, or addressed in some therapeutic manner properly, it becomes a multi-generational disorder. The generations following the traumatic event also suffer from it because it's been taught like they say DNA, but for the most part, it's passed down through culture. And cultures are passed down over generations, etc. That's why they're so hard to change. And there have been some of the earlier studies on trauma as a disorder, disease, and mental illness derived from survivors of the Jewish Holocaust in World War II, and their children suffered from it as a result of the parents who survived it having behavior characteristics associated with trauma. So you have generational type behaviors that become cultural type scenarios, and that can be negative certainly when it comes to trauma, and or it could be positive if you're looking at the opposite of trauma of success and achievement as such that's taught and passed down, that's expected, that's nurtured and encouraged. So the concept of post-generational or multi-generational trauma is very realistic. We see it in many ways with some of the negative things in the Black culture come out of being traumatic. Even in my lifetime, I've known older folks who almost never traveled more than a few miles from where they were born and grew up, Black folks I'm referring to. Even though they were technically free and able to, they would not move far or travel far from home for any reason. Well, that goes back to slavery times. It was not safe to leave the plantation. And they never knew most of the time why they didn't travel years later. They were taught it's dangerous to leave this area where you know and they know you. You're going to get in trouble. You will have no one to help you. There's nothing there good for you, et cetera. I've seen that in my lifetime. And then many, many Black people not understand it, that fear, even though it didn't happen to them directly. It happened to their foreparents, grandparents. They taught them, you can't go over there. You can't leave this state. You can't leave home. I saw people who would not take jobs across the country. I saw people who would not go to colleges and universities, people who would not go on vacations because there was a fear of leaving that geographical area. And that was as a result of trauma of many decades and generations earlier. But what also becomes necessary is that after the technical freeing of the slave, you must have resources to take care of yourself and advance yourself with opportunities. And it's often talked about, or used to be, 40 acres and a mule that was promised to the freed slaves, African-American slaves. They never got it. They never got it, the 40 acres and a mule. And that meant that a means to take care of yourself in terms of upward mobility, the down payment wasn't there. You can't typically buy a house without a down payment. So you couldn't move up economically. And it's a capitalist system. And capitalism merely means money. You can't say how much, but adequate for survival and enhancement. And without any capital, it's very difficult. The author, Byron Stevens, who wrote Just Mercy, and there's a movie about his work with Black folks in the South. He's a Harvard-trained Black attorney. He works in capital punishment, and he has a museum to many who were lynched there, et cetera, and the criminal justice system, unfairness to Black people. So he works in capital punishment, and I often tell many of my contacts and clients, if you do not have adequate money, you will be punished. If you do not have adequate capital, you're going to experience capital punishment. And we laugh, but they get it. You got to have adequate money or you're going to be punished. And you need an education, a trade, a skill, a business as such. That was also supposed to be a part of the deal with freeing the slaves, give them adequate capital and opportunity to survive and thrive. it was not done. And many of them stayed on the sharecroppers and were cheated, ripped off, and treated very horribly, and there were not forces to protect them. Some of the old slaveholders were very cruel, and anyway, they got the troops out of the South. It's a long story. There were troops that would protect black people through what we call Black Reconstruction. They were ultimately removed, and many of the whites went back to terrorizing black people and became part of the White Citizens Council, Jim Crow, Ku Klux Klan, Dixiecrats. The names have changed throughout history, but they've oppressed black people to try to make sure they're not equal. And all that goes back to the knowledge of who we are, what we've done and contributed, and how that has impacted our role in America. The good parts of what we've been able to do despite that are phenomenal. But if many of the black kids understood that, they may quickly be turned into honor roll students and extremely high achievers, which some people would not like. The aspect of overcoming trauma, giving fair and equal opportunity, and the nutrients, so to speak, to be the best you can be and live the American dream like everyone else in America can do is critical to understanding what the history of African Americans are and Juneteenth, the last official day of slavery coming to an end. But slavery by another name still exists today. And to not teach this is continuing the psychological legacy of slavery and the detrimental things that exist with it generation after generation. So we need to teach it, be aware of it ourselves as African Americans, and the rest of America ought to be open to it and taught it as well.
Very well said, very well said. And I think Dr. Smart can speak to that as well, as she mentioned her mom coming out of Alabama and the sharecropping and that they exist.
Yes.
And how she, yes.
Yes. My mother grew up in a place called Dothan, Alabama, not too far from Birmingham, Alabama, and right in the midst of me becoming an integrated student and desegregation ending in about 1967, 68, she had the occasion to have to explain to me about racism, because I was in the seventh grade, and that was the third year of integration, and what I did not understand at that point were that the people that I thought were soldiers were actually National Guardsmen with rifles with their fingers on the trigger. And that was traumatic for me as a child to see that and not understand it. I only lived about seven blocks away from the school, and my mom would not allow me to walk to school or to walk home from school. She picked me up every day, and when she had to, she would drive me directly in front of the school. I say that because when we're talking about teaching history and those people who are railing against critical race theory saying that we don't need to teach that, as you said, it's leaving out that important element of our history so that we know how to address it. James Baldwin said once that not everything we face we can change, but nothing will change unless we face it. And so when we're talking about critical race theory, we have to face those brutal facts about slavery and those brutal facts about our experiences, everything that's happening with Black Lives Matter. We're talking about housing. We're talking about the education of our kids in these areas where they have nothing to do. One of the things that bothers me the most about when we're talking about history is that we always talk about the victims and not the victimizer. It's sort of like the silent consensus that we know we're talking about white people and what it is that they've done to black people in this country. we always say blacks weren't allowed to read. I said, no, white people and Europeans did not allow blacks to read. They took them through a process when they took them out of Africa and through places like Cuba and Portugal, so that in South America, they took Africans straight from Africa through those areas before they dispersed them to other places like here in North America. And they went through a process that they call seasoning. These ubiquitous names for stuff, what they did was they were dehumanizing them as much as possible so that they would be docile enough to follow whatever to do. And I like the fact that you talk about the young person, the older people that never left their area. I went through something similar to that with my mother, because she and my father are very, very protective of all of their children. When I decided to come to Chicago, I came to Chicago on a scholarship to Northwestern University. I was in the top 10% of my class at Florida State University, and it garnered me an interview with Northwestern University, and that's how I came to Chicago. But the fact that I was I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. We cut our podcast a little short today since we had the students on and participating, and I wish we had kept those other minutes, because you and Dr. Miles always have so much informative, so much information to share with us.
I'm sorry.
Our podcast went to end in about 3 minutes what you have said, and I think the most important takeaway, hopefully, for our students, as you said, about we can be the change. We can take use the opportunities that we have to get a good education, to utilize our leadership potential, to go out and get great jobs, to have that capital to make the change. We want legitimate ways. We don't want to get money through the illegal ways that society present, but that we can show that we are responsible, and through the opportunities that we get, we now can get a great education. And the trauma that we experience in our homes, in our society itself, we can get help with that. Dr. Miles, and we'll make his information available to our young people to, in case you need to, just to talk with someone about the issues that arise. And some of the things that go on in our home, as Dr. Miles said, is a result of our history from slavery and the disappointments and lack of opportunities that occurred, and the fear that still surrounds us from doing things different, doing things better, and that we need to deal with. So as we come to the last few minutes of our, we just want to thank Dr. Smart, Dr. Miles, for sharing with us. And this will be a conversation that we will continue at a later time, because there's so much more to be said. And hopefully our young people are, if there are books, there are movies, there are documentaries about this, that you can learn that history if you're not being taught it in your schools, asking your parents about that history. And a lot of them, because it brings up a lot of hurt for them. But it to
Dr. Fulmer, I'd like to say one last thing before you let have to close. In terms of the deal of teaching, I'm sorry.
We have
Okay. In terms of one's fear of it being painful to people, I need to understand therapists, psychotherapists, and counselors are taught and trained to confront pain, to get through it, get over it, to get better. And that even goes to other areas of medicine, where there would be no surgeries if people could not confront their pain and get through it, et cetera. So it's absurd to think that not feeling good about it is the way to deal with it. Everyone in to grow on therapy, there are changes, and you must do that. And we must be the voice. Frederick Douglass says, no struggle, no progress. And we have the power within us to do it, the vote, and to acquire capital as both citizens.
Exactly. We can continue to talk with our group, although the recording of it has ended. But that is so true, what you said. And we can continue to talk with our young people for a few minutes on this topic. But I just wanted to close the podcast. And I think what you heard Dr. Miles saying, guys, that we have to go through some pain, some dealing with it, but the healing that takes place, as he just mentioned, we go through surgery. And and there's pain with that, but the healing that takes place afterwards is so rewarding, and now we're healthy and continue to progress and be a healthy, contributing to society, contributing to our families, contributing to ourselves, and not being able to not function. So young people, do you have any questions before we leave today? Staff, any questions, comments? Okay, well, we thank you.
Sorry, this is Chiquita. I did find that point about the victimizer being so passive in discussion about what happened to Black people and how do we change that and really say this happened because of laws and legislation passed by the white majority.
And I think we do it in a way that we don't want to do to them what they did to us. In other words, be criticizing or critical, because I know there are a lot of people who are doing great things and supporting us in that, but just making them aware of what occurred and not saying you did it, but this is what happened. And it was because of the type of society. And they even used the Bible and scripture to say that people were not created equal when scripture and God said we are all humanity is the same and equal. And he mentions that whether free, slave, and even when slavery is mentioned in the Bible, it's not what how it was done, as we said, in other countries as well as in the United States. And we talk about cotton, as Dr. Smart and Dr. Miles mentioned. It was really the sugar plantations in the other countries in the Caribbean that started slavery. And if you get to visit the African American Museum in D.C., that's where it starts. It doesn't start with the cotton and the plantations in the United States. It started out with sugar, and because that was the main source of income there. And then when we got to the United States, we saw it was more the cotton industry, and we were considered property. We weren't even considered as total human beings. But and the only reason we became finally three-fifths, as Dr. Miles mentioned, and Dr. Smart talked about, is that the more people you had and the more employees of property you had, the more you could get from the federal government, and it was a tax benefit. And that's how we finally became three persons. And when we were, promised some land and a mule to work at, and which never happened. And so the our ancestors stayed on the plantations working, and even the plantation owners, some of them promised you can work the land and be paid, but they had to, for credit purposes, buy the plants, buy the animals, buy the everything that they needed on credit. And so when they get paid, it went right back into the coffers of the plantation owners, so they never could get ahead. And this is why then we, you know, go into the great migration of going to the north where they could get other jobs. And the what happened there, because Irish, and there were a lot of poor white people. We have to admonish that too as well. But the color of their skin gave them an advantage. And even when the Irish and the Italians and others that we talk about came to this country, they changed their names, so they wouldn't seem to be Italian, or they had to give up their culture. And we have integrated into American society, but because of the color of our skin, it's a little different for us than even them. But it's sad that they had to give up their being Irish or being Italian or Polish or wherever they came from to integrate into the society. And even there, they are wanting their culture back, and so why can't we continue to do ours? So this is what we're talking about, and would any Dr. Smart or Dr. Mouse want to answer to Chiquita's question about how do we talk, you know, with others about what has occurred and not come across as blaming them or being critical, but doing it, having just a decent conversation about it.
I think knowledge is power, and I can't say enough about that. I challenge the young people to find out about the origin, their own origins. The origin and the history of African American people did not start on the shores of the Americas. It started on the continent of Africa, and I challenge young people to understand that Africa is a continent, not a country. Yet we still see news reports. They say something happened in Africa. They don't say something happened in Europe. They say the specific country. I spent 2 years on the young adult board as a board of director for the DuSable Museum of African American History here in Chicago, and we brought several artifacts from the slave ship, the Henrietta Marie, here for people to understand what a slave ship looked like on the inside. But what I want people to understand and the young people to understand is that African culture was real. It's still not been acknowledged. African languages are real. They have still not been acknowledged. There were over 250 different languages that Africans spoke when they were brought to America. Those languages were beaten out of these African people when they were going through that process of being seasoned and dehumanized so that they would fit into this institution of slavery. So knowledge is power. Go back and do that research on the continent of Africa and bring yourself forward from all of the peoples, all of the languages, all of the cultures that existed before we were people that were called enslaved people here in the Americas. I think that's a great starting point for them to understand and just how much that they need that power of knowledge to help start those conversations and be to be strengthened with that knowledge so that they can have those conversations with people who know little more than they know. And I think that's a strong point to start from.
Very good point. Very good point. Especially because when you study that, right, that came out of Africa. I just wanted to say this one thing, Dr. Miles, real quick, was when we study about a lot of the tools and the education, the Africans were educated. They made us think that they brought us here because we were uneducated, uncultured. We didn't. But when you go back and study that history of the continent of Africa, a lot of the things that we have today started there. And they were very smart. They were inventors. And we don't talk about the inventions of things that even here in America that African-Americans have done. Go ahead, Dr. Mike.
No, I was going to add to what Dr. Smart and what you said was saying, Dr. Fulmer. I taught at the University of Colorado African American Studies for 10 years and then in other places as such, but I always started pre-slavery Africa. I remember I was taught, fortunately, very early on, I think it was Du Bois's The World in Africa and books by Dr. Du Bois and Dr. John Hope Franklin, et cetera, about all of the genius in Africa and coming out of West Africa in particular, where many of the slaves came from to America. University of Tancora, Timbuktu. People use the word Timbuktu and do not know it was a tremendous learning center in Africa where many Europeans came, and it was described as being as good or better than anything in Europe. Europeans came there to learn and study. They were very learned people in scholarship, medicine, law, et cetera. They were very, very bright people. But that, and it's all documented, but it's not taught. When I was teaching at the university, they said, where is this? Unfortunately, I had the books. I said, here it is right here. Dr. Du Bois, Dr. John O. Franklin, Dr. Lerone Bennett, Charles Quarles, et cetera. And I had it in literature. And they said, oh. And I taught them, and these, many of them were white students. I'm saying, well, we never heard of this. And I said, what does it tell you when you leave this out? If it's not on the test, what does it tell you about what the teacher thinks of it? And I made them say it's not as important or it's not important. So they were saying that about a whole group or race of people. They were teaching them that we were not valuable and important by the sins of omission as opposed to commission. And they were quite taken with it, and they understood it as such. But that goes with fair and equal opportunity to learn to be included in the curriculum in a healthy way, a positive way. And we have contributed many things to this society as such, in medicine, education, science, et cetera. People were shocked when Michelle Obama said living in a house built by slaves when she was in the White House. White people were freaked out. There's no black people that had built the White House. And the city of Chicago had been designed by a black man. I mean, the city of Washington had been designed by a black man. And so there's such a rich history of contribution that we need to know, and the rest of the country and the world needs to know, because we're valuable contributors. And once it goes through your psyche, your mind, everything goes through the mind. But I'm talking about positive, healthy psychology, not pathology and victimization, how to achieve. And real quickly, I know we got time limits, but I'm trying to retire, et cetera, but the need is there. And many of my clients today are mostly men, black men, as it turns out, by chance, are successful men around the country who still need guidance to keep on keeping on as such. Many own companies, many are retired professional athletes, and they're hungry for this knowledge as such, even though they've made money and have education, because they're alone going through this journey. Dr. Smart would know how lonely the journey can be going you know, through these barriers to get to a certain point. And many don't make it because they don't have this information we're talking about. They're very, very bright, but they need to know their self-worth, the cultural and historical worth of black people and what came before us. And what we're dealing with is not nearly as difficult as what our forefathers and ancestors went through, but we have to keep on keeping on. We owe it to them, and we can do this. But as long as they discourage us and we think we can't do it, we won't. If we ever believe we can do it, and that's where African-American studies and these things come into play, how strong we are, there is no ceiling. There is no ceiling.
So thank you so much as we bring the session to an end. And tomorrow we will be talking with Bob Ross, a businessman, and how his business became successful. And we have young people I know working with us this summer who want to have their own businesses in different arenas. And that's what we will be talking about. So, again, thank you, Dr. Smart. Thank you, Dr. Miles. Thank you, young people and the staff of UFuture. And we will bring the session to a close. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy Juneteenth.
You're welcome. Thank you. Happy Juneteenth. Bye-bye. Thank you.